back to Shattering Myths. I was just thinking about that airplane. Again, we'll get to Glenn here in just a moment. But, you know, when they were talking about where this airplane could be, the reality is that from any point that airplane can fly, just shy of 9,000 statute miles. The circumference of the Earth is just shy of 25,000 statute miles. But because it can fly west, north, east, south, in any direction, 9,000 miles, that means that there's a swath, a circle, if you will, whose diameter is 18,000 miles. Now, the circumference of the Earth is only 25,000 miles. That means that this airplane is somewhere in 70% of the Earth's surface. 70%. I mean, all they can exclude is actually 28% of the world where it cannot be. Oh, boy, we really have it narrowed down now. Hello, Glenn. Welcome to the program. It's good to talk to you.
Hello, Yada. No more blue water, palm trees, and pineapples for you. Back to the rhetorical grindstone.
Yes, indeed. I was in Hawaii with my family. We had a marvelous time, and yes, there are pineapples and tropical beverages and all sorts of good things to eat and fun things to do. I had the opportunity to play a little golf and scuba dive. One of my favorite things to do is to scuba dive in the presence of humpback whales, which is possible this time of year. Yeah, but their song, all of this, the melody and the intensity of the song of the humpback whales is one of the great thrills. So I had a good time.
The best I've ever done is an eagle ray, but that's all right.
Yeah, in fact, we had the chance to swim with manta rays. They were manta rays and turtles are two of the favorite favorite things in that part of the world.
Yeah, not supposed to bug them, of course. But I couldn't resist swimming up to about 3 to 6 feet away from one, you know. That was very cool.
Yeah.
About the military.
Yes.
This up first. We're led to believe that women have progressed in the military because they can be things like pilots and then mm-hmm. not working combat pilots and stuff. But given the present state of things, I'm thinking the old order of things, when you had, you know, prostitute camp followers following the Roman legions, was morally less reprehensible than mm-hmm. what's going on now.
Correct.
You know, because at least they were consenting in a sense.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know how you'd compare this to the great atrocities by the Japanese in World War II, where they had what they called their comfort women, and they allowed their troops to rape and gang rape Chinese and Korean and Filipino women with reckless abandon. You know, to rape an enemy, which is standard practice in war, has been for a very long time, is perpetrated even today in Syria, where both sides are raping the opposition's women. It's one thing to rape the enemy's women, bad thing to do, reprehensible, but to rape your own troops and then to protect the rapist while harassing the victim. You know, I don't know if there's anything more reprehensible than what the U.S. military is doing at an epidemic rate.
And I believe the psychological conventional wisdom on this is still, you know, rape is more so a crime of violent dominance than it is so much of sexual, you know, expression.
Agreed. But that's why I think it's so interesting in Islam that the Quran approves sex with the captives, because Muhammad himself was engaged in rape, and this Islamic paradise is filled with perpetual virgins, so there's a constant conquest. An act of rape is an act of pedophilia. It's not about sex. It is it's about dominion, of conquest, of being empowered over another individual. It's a horrible crime.
That's especially twisted in Islam. I'm always trying to point out to people that the 72 virgins are an astrological thing originally. And the people at the upper levels know this. 72 times 5 is 360. They're the 5-degree increments of the astrological calendar. Mm-hmm. But anyway, originally. But then they take this and twist it, you know, to the carnal side. CMJ, they're never going to get rid of the military courts who require elimination of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the elimination of which would give back to soldiers' rights, which they do not have under the UCMJ, and those who hold their contracts of indentured servitude would not want them to have those rights, so it
of course
not change.
Yeah, I agree. They're not going to change, but there's so many things broken in America, you can't fix them all, but one of the things that would need to be fixed if you're going to have a moral country is that you can't have a military code of justice, which gives the military total control over, the indentured servants, and you need to make the military so that volition is possible. People can make moral decisions, and that they would be held accountable by the same justice system the rest of us are accountable to. And so long as we have the good old boys club where the rapist is protected and the victim is abused, you're certainly not going to get any moral person standing and saluting the military.
Right. That's right, exactly so. As to the plane, the missing aircraft, I'm sure they can compute, like, from the time they said, how much fuel it was loaded with, and from the time it took off to the time of last contact, radar contact, now they see entirely how much fuel would have been remaining. They can then make a nice pie slice shaped arc as to, you know, where that thing could be.
And by the way, the problem is that it's not just a pie-shaped arc, because the airplane was originally on a course that was north by northwest, and all we have at the end is a potential sighting by a radar operator that can't identify the airplane, that it turned west over the Malaysian Peninsula, and then we have a satellite that may have received the last ping from the aircraft. But that satellite shows
and
that it's...
fisherman who supposedly saw a plane burning, going down. But that's very dubious. I think that's
of course. We're dealing basically with the airplane could be as in any one of the Muslim Caucasus regions north of and around the Caspian Sea to the north, Antarctica to the south. We're not just going from Vietnam on the west to Australia, and it's, you know, as they, from a Western point of view, Vietnam and Australia aren't terribly far apart, but we're talking about Vietnam on the west going east to Australia, which is, means that basically 70% of the world's surface is available for search.
Which makes me wonder if it could have reached Diego Garcia to where it could have been like refitted for a false flag, you know, so it could have an a la Akbar happy ending. I can't imagine anybody being psychotic. The one theory I've heard exploded is that somebody wanted to steal the plane to chop it up for parts on the black market. You need a handful of really sick pups willing to kill over 200 people to do that.
There is no financial opportunity other than kidnap for ransom, but I don't even know how you pull that off there are a whole lot of situations like this where in Islam a person has no reason to live, only a reason to die, and so co-pilot and pilot were Muslims, and they may have looked at this as a grand suicide mission, but other than that, is really there's no rational explanation for why they would have commandeered the airplane.
Yeah, or it could have been global hawked off somewhere to be prepped for a false flag. So, I don't know.
But Muslims like to take credit for their work. These pilots were clearly Muslims. They like to take credit for their most heinous deeds, and so they're really not likely to do a false flag. And then at this point,
I meant somebody else false. No, I meant the Western influence is false flagging it as a Muslim.
Yeah, I don't think there's any possibility of that. Yeah, I don't know. I think you can't control these airplanes from the ground. and we know who was in charge of the airplane. We know who was on the airplane, and there's this really a 0% possibility of that. And the Chinese don't need a 777 to reverse engineer it because they have purchased 777s from Boeing. They have a fleet of them, so there's
you don't think it could be Global Hawk taking off soon?
No. There's no ability to control a civilian aircraft from the ground. They're not drones.
Okay, I hope you're correct.
Yeah, I'm positive. I am positive that I'm correct. It cannot be done.
At this point, I think the biggest sigh of relief would occur amongst the largest number of people if they could find a thing on the ocean floor, because then all of this speculation could finally end. The people could have finality and closure on their grieving, and you know, the whole world could eventually get by it. As it is now, I heard a guest on a TV program, you know, complaining about the rife speculation that's going on and the irresponsibility and even to some degree psychological cruelty of it, you know.
I've heard that excuse too, but you know, you're talking about a 777. I mean, this is a 200 by 200 foot airplane from nose to tail to from wingtip to wingtip. One of the most sophisticated devices man has ever conceived, and it has over 200 people on board, and it disappears. It's a huge story. It's a bigger story than it's even being presented as.
Right, it is a huge story. My heart goes out to the family members and loved ones who have to grieve because of the nature, the damage that's done and this whole through this whole process.
Correct. Yeah, because it's possible that the airplane landed someplace. There's not a lot of places that can where a 777 can land and not be detected, but you know there is that remote possibility that it landed someplace that it wasn't a suicide mission. And so there's still hope for those people, and that's a travesty that they and, you know, one of the things that's always bothered me, Glenn, is that we are very selective and becoming increasingly tight in what governments are willing to reveal. And it doesn't matter if it's Ursay, the owner of the Colts, and we know that he had four felony charges for driving under the influence and possession of illegal drugs in his vehicle, and we don't know what the drugs were. Or it's this case where, you know, I am absolutely certain that the spy agencies of the world know vastly more than what they're saying. And
I certainly hope so.
Well, since we're paying for these things, why in the world are they precluding access to information? It's deeply troubling to me, and it's pervasive around the United States now that the government is withholding information that it ought not withhold. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering This. So while I was on vacation, the world also lost Crimea, at least if we are to believe the United States. I heard Biden, that whiny voice of his, shaking a finger at the Russians and saying, oh boy, what they've done is illegal, what they've done is really bad. So let me understand this. It's okay for the population of Crimea to vote to secede from Russia, but it's not okay for them to vote to rejoin Russia. I mean, they were part of Russia for hundreds of years, and they voted to secede from Russia some 20 years ago, and the world recognized that, but when they vote to rejoin with Russia, no, can't do that. It's okay for the U.S. to fight a civil war over succession, but it's not okay for the Russians to hold a vote and let people decide. It's okay for the U.S. to take Texas, which was never part of the country, but it's not okay for the Russians to reclaim a region that was part of its own territory for centuries. And the ultimate question is, why, other than the Crimean Peninsula, which I can see its value to the Russians, but why would anyone else want the rest of Ukraine? You know, Russia's not interested in Ukraine. In fact, Putin came out today and said, I have no interest in Ukraine. You can have it. But why would anyone want it? petulant, violent, and ruthless anti-Semites who want others to pay them not to work. And the question is, who is going to send them $35 billion this year for them not to work and for them to be ruthless as they have been? And then $35 billion the following year and the year after that. Who's going to supply them with gas, energy? Who's going to do it? The Russians were willing, and so the Europeans and the Americans have a tizzy fit and say, no, 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 you can't influence them. We want to be the ones who provide them with these, let's put in parentheses, loans. You know, the European Union, through the IMF and the United States, have provided loans four times to the Ukraine. The Ukrainians four times in a row have welched on the terms and conditions of those loans. They haven't paid any of them back. They agreed to terms, and then they welched on the terms of those loans. Why would anyone want them? You know, when are we going to make realize that, let them go? Yeah, the best thing that could happen to Europe and to America is for the Russians to take responsibility for the Ukraine, and yet the Russians have no interest in doing so. Why are we wagging our finger at them? It is astonishing to me that the we now have a G7 as opposed to a G8. The U.S. wants to exclude Russia from the G8. That we are imposing sanctions on Russia. You know, you want to impose sanctions on Russia? Then you can just eliminate your production of commercial and military aircraft. It's gone. You see, titanium comes from Russia. We don't have any in the United States. Yes, you can get some from China, but we're wagging our finger at the Chinese, too. We can't build jet engines. We can't assemble jet aircraft. Our military comes to a screeching halt. Yeah, let's put sanctions on Russia. See how that works out for us. Europe is totally dependent upon Russian energy sources. Let them wag their finger at the Russians. Let them tell the Russians that they ought not accept a 97% referendum of the people of Crimea. Yeah. Let's see how that works. The Ukrainian foreign minister said, we do not recognize and never will recognize the so-called independence or the so-called agreement on Crimea joining the Russian Federation. And what are you going to do about it? You just let a coup. Molotov cocktail coup. You know, you don't have a legitimate government. You don't have a functioning economy. You are totally dependent. And you're telling the people of Crimea that they have no say in their own future? You didn't even have a referendum in the Ukraine. You took over the government by mob. No vote, and yet you want to be recognized? And the people vote for their independence and then to rejoin Russia, and their vote isn't counted? What a hypocritical and disgustingly morally bankrupt world we live in. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering This. Because it is a news-related item, I'd like to return to our coverage of Yeshaya, which is Isaiah 17 and 18. We began our review at the end of the program about a week or so ago and covered the first three statements in Yeshaya 17. Now, the reason I say this is an item that's in the news is that through this prediction, God tells us precisely what's going to happen in the Syrian war, who the belligerents are, what the outcome of the war is, what's also going to happen in conjunction with this war, and where it's going to lead us over the next 15 years. So it is an extraordinarily relevant bit of news, although this news is future news, both present and future, but primarily future news. And so I'd like to return to it, the three statements that we considered So we're up to speed. Before I left for vacation, we're God's introduction. He said this is a prophetic pronouncement regarding Damascus. Amasa means this is a statement that is presented on behalf of the ultimate authority regarding a future event. So it's a prophetic pronouncement regarding Damascus. Behold, Damascus is revolting and corrupt and will be removed from among inhabited cities. It is degenerate and unrestrained and will be abolished. And she shall totally and actually become a twisted and tangled heap of rubble. Now, we've seen this process begin. Much of the outskirts of Damascus now are nothing more than a twisted and tangled heap of rubble. In fact, this was a concept that wasn't even possible until the construction began with reinforced concrete and with steel being used to hold buildings together. Because now when they are shelled, when they are bombed, they become twisted and tangled heaps of rubble, because the rubble itself, rather than just becoming a pile of rubble, can become twisted and tangled because of the steel girders and steel rods that are used to hold the masonry buildings together. We are recognizing that Damascus is revolting and corrupt. Matter of fact, the UN today released an item that we will consider as part of tomorrow's program, where by the fact that the war crimes being perpetrated on both sides are just heinous. I mean, it'd be hard to imagine a more revolting and corrupting and more degenerate and unrestrained situation than what is currently happening in Syria, where both sides are revolting. Absolutely disgusting. Both sides kidnapping children. Both sides raping enemy combatants. Both sides mutilating civilian populations. Both sides starving people to death. Both sides engaged in torture. Both sides engaged in wanton mass murder. This is the ultimate and revolting and corrupt. But Damascus still stands. It is not abandoned. It is still inhabited. And so God is saying that this war will continue. Now, it's got to continue for a prolonged period of time for it to be completely deserted and forsaken. And I say that because of two things. One is Assad is winning the war. Even with the United States, through its proxies, Qatar, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, providing the reprehensible fundamentalist Sunni Mujahideen with all manner of weapons, from shoulder-fired missiles to rocket launchers to anti-tank rockets to anti-aircraft guns, with us providing them with all manner of sophisticated weaponry and uncounted amounts of weaponry, and with Saudi Arabia in particular recruiting Sunni Islamic jihadists from around the world, tens of thousands of them, Assad is winning the war, and they're winning it fairly decisively. And yet it says that his capital, Damascus, is going to be destroyed. Now, that can only happen under two circumstances. One is that this war wages on and on and on, and the number of Sunni Islamic jihadists just continues to besiege Syria. They continue to want to fight in the great jihad, and there's essentially an unlimited supply of them with 1.5 billion Muslims around the world, that they continue in great quantities to pour into Syria to reinforce the rebels. And where there's a finite number of Hezbollah members and a finite number of Syrian military units, there isn't a finite number of Muslim jihadists, particularly Sunnis. That the Europeans and the United States, and through their proxies, continue to supply them with all manner of weapons. and that ultimately they prevail because they're outgunned their opponents 10-1 and they outmanned them 4-1. But for that to occur, this war is going to go on for another decade. Or it becomes so obvious between now and then that Assad will eventually lose, that the Iranians who back him, who now have a nuclear bomb or are in very close proximity to having one, will deploy a nuclear bomb to say, all right, you want Damascus? Have it. And they destroy it. Those are really the two possibilities. But either way, Assad's going to lose. Syria will no longer be a nation. Abandoned and forsaken, estranged, deserted, destroyed, and damned will be the inhabited regions and the populated cities of Aroer, which are the outcasts in Jordan and Lebanon. That's important because the mythical people known as the Palestinians live as outcasts in refugee camps there. And God would want to have us know the fate of those who would terrorize his chosen people. For there will be roaming animals fighting and militant militias failing miserably. But then ultimately there will be no one left to terrorize. God has presented for our edification the outcome of the proxy war being fought in Syria. He says, so the fortified place and defensive structures will cease to exist on account of the northern kingdom, along with the government out of Damascus, including the remnant of Syria, for being similarly vehement and burdensome, fanatical and onerous, dim-witted and enraged. God is saying that it is their own stupidity, their own vehement and fanatical nature that brings this upon themselves. They annihilate their own city. They bring down their own country. But Syria is not going to become the greater Syria of the Islamist dreams, according to God. So while the Sunni jihadists will destroy Damascus, or Damascus will be destroyed by a Iranian nuclear bomb, there's not going to be a new greater glory that the jihadists are seeking, which is a caliphate out of Damascus and the greater Syria as a base to launch the great jihad against the rest of the world. There is no longer going to be a nation of Syria. It's going to be destroyed, brought down. Something I've said about Islamic terrorism for a long time, that the Islamic terrorist definitely want to conquer the world, but they're incapable of conquering the world. There will never be an Islamic invasion of the United States or Europe in the terms of a military invasion where they conquer and occupy Europe or the United States. Not capable of it. But they are capable of wielding great destruction. They are capable of mass murder. They're capable of reprehensible acts of grotesque terrorism. They're capable of being destructive. And that's what God is predicting here. He says that these corrupt and fanatical individuals will destroy, but they're going to destroy everything. The country, the capital city, the lives of the inhabitants. They will act as terrorists, but finally there will be no civilians left to terrorize. God then tells us the children of Israel, those individuals who endure with God, shall actually continue to exist, prophetically declares Yahweh of the vast array of spiritual messengers and envoys. It's important for us to know that while Israel, according to this prophecy as we read through it, is going to be pummeled by a tidal wave of jihadists, that Israel as a nation, Israelites as the chosen people, will endure. Badly bludgeoned for their self-reliance and for their willingness to accommodate Islam, this most cancerous death plague of human creation, they will be pummeled, but they will survive. And the reason they're going to survive is ultimately God will intervene. That's where we left off, and I'd like to continue. But, Glenn, I know that we still have you on the line. Do you have a comment or any insight before we move on? It's a fairly profound statement that God has made.
Looking at all of this, it's an interesting, I keep thinking about it. We're so distracted at the moment from that. You know, with the going on in Syria and Iran right now in favor of what's going on with Ukraine. Mm-hmm. You know, and now the airplane story now, and on top of that, we now have a crashed helicopter near the Space Needle in Seattle with two people dead, one critically injured. So that's, you know, it's just one squawk after another that is, you know, that diverted attention from this.
And this is really, according to God, this is the catalyst for World War III. That's what God is telling us. This is the catalyst for World War III, and yet you're right. We are distracted from it, and that is a travesty because there's so much to learn from this story.
Well, certainly the goings on with Russia, are prepositioning things as well.
Well, yes, because Russia is on the opposite side in Syria, and because Europe and the United Nations is hypocritically tongue-lashing Russia over doing what was eminently foreseeable and maybe even appropriate on behalf of Russia. We'll return after the break. Come back to Shattering Myths. In the midst of this future narrative regarding the fall of Syria, the fall of Jordan and Lebanon, to Islamic terrorists, and how that relates to Yahweh's pronouncement that Yisrael itself will survive. This prophecy reveals that the promised land, the nation of Israel, will be narrowed at its midsection. Now, this strongly suggests that these events and these proclamations are related. That is to say, the Islamic jihadists who bring down the Assad regime, destroying Damascus, and in the process, eliminating Syria as a nation, will turn their sights immediately to Israel. The Muslim Mujahideen, rather than releasing their weapons once Bashar al-Assad is dead, will simply turn around and point them in a different direction, this time towards Jerusalem. These terrorist gangs, without tanks, an air force, or navy, will be no match for Israel's defense forces. Out of necessity, the IDF will mow them down as these jihadists attempt to cross the border. And while there will be no viable alternative, Israel is the only nation on earth which is rebuked for defending itself. Stopping the Islamic terrorists clamoring to pillage and plunder will galvanize the world against the nation being victimized. Jews will be portrayed as aggressors and as mass murderers. The solution, which is currently being brokered by America, will be to establish a Palestinian nation and therefore a terrorist state in the West Bank in Gaza. This act will, in the promised land, saw Israel into right at its heart, where 70% of the Israeli population currently resides. So, although the Syrian jihadists will fail by attempting to appease them and their fellow Muslims, the Middle East, and then the entire world will be engulfed in a much larger war, according to God, and he has never gotten a prediction wrong. This prophecy, therefore, predicts that the land for peace concessions, in which Gaza and the West Bank will be given to the Muslims, in exchange for useless proclamations of peace, will cause Israel to become vulnerable. What God is saying here is that just as the militant nature of and the battles of World War I led to the ultimate concessions of Neville Chamberlain regarding Czechoslovakia that led to World War II, that the same kind of thing is going to happen. This time it's not going to be in Europe. It's going to be terrorists fighting over Damascus, and then them turning their sights to Israel and the world, in fact, America, surrendering the heart of Israel to these terrorists in hopes that they will lay down their weapons and be peaceful. And the exact same thing is going to happen. When Neville Chamberlain announced peace in our time, within 6 months, the world was engulfed in war. That's what's going to happen here. God has made this very evident to us, obvious to us, through his prophetic pronouncement. And yet, as Glenn mentioned in the last segment, the world has become distracted. You know, the United States is currently, when it's not tongue-lashing Russia for taking back what has belonged to it for years in the Crimean Peninsula, is neglecting the fact that the same Secretary of State is compelling Israel to sacrifice the West Bank. They want Israel to narrow itself to 5 miles of width, a border less than 5 miles away from where 70% of the population lives, in full recognition that when Gaza was given to these same terrorists, to Hamas, they used it as a launching pad for rockets into civilian communities. What are they going to do when they have both sides, their country? They can put whatever weapons of war they wish to. What kind of hell are they going to rain down on Israel? It is imminently foreseeable, and God has told us what's going to happen, even if we're unable to predict the future by using the past. And yet, the United States is the principal architect of this plan, one that rewards terrorism, one that sacrifices the only reasonable ally in the entire region. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break.